Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Welcome back to Right on Four Corners. I'm Delcherie Gladden. I'm a USA Today bestselling author of more than 30 published novels. And on this week's episode, I have Joseph Bedall. He's here going to be talking about his newest book in the Lassiter and Martinez case file series. Joseph, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Good morning. Thank you for having me this morning. I have been writing since about the year 2000. I finally got around to doing what I always wanted to do, and my first book was published in 2003. And Everything to Lose, my most recent one, is my 18th novel. And as you said, the latest in the Lassiter Martinez case file series.
And I was looking at your bio, and it looks like you were previously in the military as well as in the finance industry.
Yes, I served 6 years in the U.S. Army as an officer, and including tours of duty in Greece and Vietnam. And after getting out of the service, I spent most of my career in the financial services industry, banking and mortgage banking, and retired at the end of 07 and have been writing full-time since then.
Well, that's great. I think that's, for a lot of people, kind of getting to writing takes a little bit of a journey.
Yeah, in my case, it was a long journey.
Well, I'm glad you made it there. Your previous experiences in your career and in your military, has that played a role in your writing projects up to this point?
Yeah, my first couple of books, and particularly my Danforth Saga series, which has 7 books published in that series so far, borrowed heavily from my military experience, particularly my time in Greece. And then I've written a couple books that have been standalone thrillers, Shell Game and Payback, which have leaned, again, heavily on my banking and financial services experience.
That's really neat. I think that lends a lot of credibility when people can draw on something that they have a lot of experience in. And I noticed in the Martinez and Lassiter series, not necessarily a lot of, you know, military, although there is police. This is a police case or on the financial side. But I could tell that it's something that you have an interest in and that maybe some of your background has kind of played a role into at least the processes and the style of this book.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. The Lassiter Martinez case files series kind of took me on a different trip, if you will. I always have strong female characters in my books, but the female characters have never been the primary character, the primary protagonist. And I wanted to write something where I had a strong female protagonist, and in the case, of course, Lassiter Martinez, I had 2. And it was really, the series really drew more on what I like to read than personal experiences. And the catalyst for writing the series really was not only a desire to write a series about a strong female character, but also it was a story told to me by a very dear friend. And that contributed mightily to the plot and the storyline in Borderline, which was the first book in the Lassiter Martinez case files series. Writing about female characters was a different experience for me. You know, I kind of half jokingly say that it's easy to write male characters because all you need is a car chase, a gunfight, some booze and some sex, and you've got a book. But with female characters, they're much more complex. And also just little things that, for instance, when I was writing the book, I had one of the characters wipe her eyes. And my wife reminded me that women don't wipe their eyes because they'll smear their makeup so they block their eyes. And it's just little things like that that I had to pay attention to. But from the standpoint of the courage and the intellect and so forth, whether it's a female character or a male character, my characters tend to have the same kind of quality.
You mentioned having two main female protagonists, the two detectives, but I would actually mention you have a third as well in villain character. Ooh, you know, she's not the main villain of the story. She's kind of a side plot that I'm coming into this with having read the fourth book. I haven't been able to read the first three, which I would love to do. I really enjoyed this. But I was actually really drawn to her character as well. And her complexity, she's battling a lot of inner turmoil throughout her plot line.
Yeah. You know, I think that you don't want your protagonist to be all good, and you don't want your antagonist to be all bad. And so it's important to have your characters well-rounded, if you will. And so I wanted the reader to, and I think any author that writes about a character, you want their characters to be, they want their characters to be well-rounded. They want them to have qualities that are both good and bad. And you want the reader to have, at times, be sympathetic toward the antagonist. And so in the case of Everything to Lose, the primary antagonist, also female, is also the primary antagonist in Natural Causes, the previous book in the series. In the case of Borderline, the first in the series, the primary antagonist, again, is female, as are the protagonists. And again, there are moments where you feel empathy for that antagonist, but in the end, they're an antagonist. So, you know, they can't be so good that you regret when something bad happens.
True, yes. And that's an interesting balance to strike. And aside from the female antagonist, Lisa, there is, of course, you know, the serial killer pair that the two detectives are trying to find and stop throughout the story. And I wanted to talk about them because I love writing villains myself, and writing those really complex bad characters. Because, like you said, you do have to have the good and the bad in order for them to really be interesting and believable. And I was really struck by the comparison between the two main killers. And you have one who's more of the leader, one who's more of the follower. And I was interested in how you went about developing their characters and how they played off each other.
Yeah, the leader, you know, you look at, I provide some background about the leader's upbringing and the kind of abuse that he got from classmates, from his mother. The father abandoned him. And so what I did was, and which is a fairly common mechanism, and what you do is you build up the character, build up sympathy for the character. Now, that's no excuse for his later bad deeds, but what you're in effect doing is creating a human being. You're not creating a caricature of a human being. You're not creating an automaton. You're creating somebody that has feelings and, in his case, a physical deformity that really precipitates a lot of the abuse that he gets. And so what you've done is you've created somebody that, you know, the reader starts to have some empathy for, but then that empathy slowly begins to dissipate as the character starts to perform, in this case, horrendous crimes.
Yes, and that's something I think some writers struggle with writing those antagonistic characters, is actually having them do bad things. Because I think on a psychological level, it's like, oh, I'm coming up with these ideas, you know, and it makes you, as the writer, be like, where are these coming from? I've heard some writers make comments like that. But then also, you know, it's this character that you've built, you've created, and then you're having them do awful things. So I was wondering if that was something that got to you at all, or that was a struggle for you, because some people do it really well and they connect and they can dive into those darker characters, and then others really it's just so much of a struggle, they kind of just avoid writing those types of characters.
Yeah, sometimes the characters I create make me uncomfortable. But, you know, if you want your book to be accepted by the reading public, then your book and basically your characters have got to be realistic. And people know that bad things happen, and people know there are good people that do bad things and bad people that do good things at times. And if you don't present your characters in a humanistic way, humanistic in the sense of people are both good and bad, then you really have created, as I termed them before, caricatures of people. So, you know, Oscar Benedetto is a sympathetic character in the beginning, but he's an awful, awful person in the end. And there are reasons perhaps that he's an awful person, but there's no excuse for it. And and Oscar made me as uncomfortable writing about him as any character I've ever written about.
That's interesting. Like I said, I like writing villains, and I've kind of had that experience myself. And I think trying to work through that sense of uncomfortableness while you're writing can really help you as a writer understand that character and add that depth to them. And that's something with Oscar reading the book. I really did feel like he was a realistic character, and I did have like that level of understanding of like, man, if a few things had gone differently in his early life, he could have been a completely different person. But this is where he ends up, and this is the person that he is in the story. And it is really interesting to, as the reader, to forge those connections with the antagonists and, you know, these darker characters, and have that level of understanding, but still be rooting for them to be stopped soon, hopefully, before anything else happens.
No, exactly. I love what you said about, you know, the depth of your evil characters. It's interesting. It's really easier to write about an antagonist than it is about a protagonist, because a protagonist, you want them to have some flaws, but generally they're way more good than bad. And so you have to be careful that you don't make your protagonist so bland that the reader doesn't get engaged or doesn't feel invested in that character. It's not difficult to create an antagonist who is the antithesis of bland. I mean, antagonists tend to be much more complex and have, as you said, more depth. And so they're more fun to write about. And one of the shames about the way stories evolve around the antagonist is that typically the reader wants the antagonist to get his or her in the end, which means that typically in books in the thriller genre, the antagonist is eliminated. But there's so much work involved with building that antagonist on the author's part that it's almost a shame to see him go.
That's very true. You do kind of have this sense of like, well, gosh, I put all that work into it and now it's over.
Exactly right. And, you know, I had several people talk to me about, well, I'd love to see Lisa French come back, you know, the female antagonist in both book three and in Everything to Lose. And I said, well, I think it's too late for that if you've read to the end of the book. But people really liked her despite the fact that she was an awesome, awesome person.
I agree with that. I really enjoyed her as a character, even though, she's not the greatest or most moral person on, but she was really engaging to read and to get inside her mind, especially as she's kind of battling with herself through what she's doing. I found her to be a really interesting character to follow.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I like writing her character a lot. And, you know, just when you think that she is all bad, she comes to the rescue of that young girl in the parking lot. And she has nothing to gain from that. Mm-hmm. And so I did that intentionally because I wanted to try and change the reader's mind a little bit about Lisa. But then she goes back into her usual mode shortly thereafter.
I think that's an important part of writing in the thriller and suspense genre is keeping the reader on their toes, keeping that certain amount of doubt that, do I know who this character is? Do I know the way that this story is going and how it's going to end up? And I think those moments of, huh, I wasn't expecting that, really adds a lot with suspense and thrillers and keeps the reader going page to page because they're just not quite sure that what they expect is going to happen is actually going to happen. And I think that was really well done in this story.
Well, thank you. That's high praise. I really work at doing that. And what a lot of aspiring authors do too often is that they deploy misdirection and what I call the roller coaster ride, where you build up the tension and then you release the tension and, you know, you kind of do this almost like a sine wave, you know, where the reader is, you know, you get their heart rate up and then you give them a chance to get their breath and so forth. But too often they do it just through plotting and that's fine to a point, but they need to do it through character involvement. And that's why, you know, the example I just used with Lisa French, and, you know, she's doing bad things and then she rescues the young girl and all of a sudden the reader stops and thinks, oh, you know, maybe she's not as bad as I thought she was. And then you disabuse the reader of that thought, if you know, in the chapter or two later.
Yeah, that is a great point. And that kind of brings me to another thing I wanted to ask you about as far as plotting. You know, most writers are familiar with the terms, you know, plotter or pantser. And typically I tend to be more of a pantser, but that's a little bit harder to do with mystery in general, because you do have to know your clues, know the process of how this mystery is going to unfold, or you kind of end up making a mess of it most of the time. And you have to go back and fix a bunch of stuff. So what is your process of writing when you're approaching a mystery, a thriller like this?
First of all, I'm a, as you call it, a pantser. I mean, if I had to outline what I was about to write, I'd stop writing because it would take all the fun away from it. So what I typically start with is some kernel of a story that is either, as in the case of Borderline, where a friend of mine told me a story about something had happened to his wife, and I was so enthralled with the concept that I went home and I sat up till 3 o'clock in the morning starting writing the story. But I'll typically start with a setting or a character or more usually an event. And that event just literally, when I call it a kernel, it's just like a seed and that just grows and grows and grows. And I have no idea where I'm going, but I usually know when the story's done. And, you know, one of the things you don't want to do, as in the case of Everything to Lose, is you don't want just one crime if it's a mystery. You want your main characters involved with multiple things. You want their time committed to a lot of things going on, and those kind of subplots wind up just kind of occurring as I'm writing the story. And that's really the fun for me. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't have to do a lot of research. For instance, when I write books in the Danforth Saga series, there are military and espionage elements in those books. And it's been a long time since I served in the Army. And their, you know, weaponry has changed and electronics have changed. You know, technology has changed. And you have to do a lot of research. But generally, I just start, as I said, with that little kernel of an idea. For instance, right now, I decided, I don't know where it came from, but I decided that I was going to write a book that takes place in Ireland and France. And so that's what I'm doing now. And I don't know. I had never been to Ireland and France when I got the idea. But I decided, you know, I think that might be fun to do. So, you know, I know people that put butcher paper up on their walls of their office and to have the entire story plotted before they even start writing it. I couldn't do that.
It's not my style either. I hate outlining in general, but occasionally sitting down and figuring out a piece or a series of clues or something when I'm working on a mystery is necessary. But yeah, I like that approach. of just kind of seeing where things take you. And I thought that was interesting. You mentioned some of the subplots come to you that way. And that was another thing in this book that I enjoyed, that there were those layers of plot lines. You have the continuing plot line from the previous book with the attempt on the detectives' lives and the fallout from that. And right. also Lisa's story, her trying to get revenge. And there's like layers of personal story as well as the mystery itself. And these side ventures that previous characters and new characters brought in. And is that something that, as you're writing, can get difficult for you to manage? Or how do you kind of keep track of everything as you're writing?
Yeah, the good news is that I'm not senile yet. I worry about that because balancing all of these things is not easy. And how often have you, I'm sure you've heard the same way I've heard it, over the years, and people are continually coming up to you, and once they know you've written a book or more than one book, and say, you know, I've got this great idea for a book, and they don't have a clue how hard it is to write a book. And they, you know, you're juggling plots and subplots and multiple characters. And you know, in the case of Barbara Lassiter in book three titled Natural Causes, Barbara develops a relationship with a gentleman and they get engaged, and then he gets injured in an assassination attempt directed at Barbara and Susan. And that subplot of his being in the hospital in book it's carried over into book four, and he's lost his short-term memory, which means he's lost all knowledge of who Barbara is. And I wanted to do that because I wanted to show that Barbara was having this terrible personal trauma at the same time that she's stressed over trying to solve crimes. But again, that's what real people do. People go to work, but they have personal problems. And one of the things that I'm very proud of about my writing is that none of my characters leap tall buildings in a single bound. I believe that my readers should relate to my characters because those characters are real life people with real life problems. And so that was what I wanted to do with Everything to Lose, to show that one of the main characters is having to juggle personal problems at the same time while juggling work problems.
Yeah, and I thought you did a really nice job with that. All the characters, even, you know, protagonist, antagonist, I did feel like were very relatable. And reading, going through her story and her heartache of trying to manage this loss in a way, but still trying to hold on to him, it did add this extra quality to her that it was like, you know, because she's a strong, tough lady. She's out solving crimes and involved in, you know, a lot with her work. But then she does have this softer side that she's struggling to deal with and keep, you know, her attention split. Really did bring her to life for me.
Well, thank you. That's nice to hear. That was what I intended, but you never know how the reader's going to accept it.
Well, really nicely done, I thought anyway. So I think a lot of readers will really relate with her.
Great. Thank you.
Now, we are just about out of time, but I did want to ask you, you mentioned your project set in Ireland. What are you working on and what can readers expect to see from you next?
Well, I just finished a novel called Solace, and that is the fourth in another one of my series, The Curtis Chronicles, and that will be out in 2023. And then I'm working on a book that I've tentatively titled The Reunion, which involves a group of retired CIA personnel who go to Ireland on a golfing vacation, but the fellow that from the CIA retiree who has invited them all to this trip has really got an ulterior motive for inviting them there, because there was all of them were involved with a case that involved trying to capture an international terrorist a la Carlos the Jackal. And so none of them realize what he's up to. And so that's kind of where the story is at this point.
Oh, that sounds like a fun one. And you said you were still working on that, or that you don't have a date for that one quite yet?
Just started that one.
Okay. Well, we'll keep an eye out.
I just got back from Ireland and France, where I went and did some research, and I'm really excited. I'm excited about all my books. They're fun. So.
Well, good. Well, and if readers want to reach out to you, what is the best way to find you and stay up to date on what you're doing?
Well, I am very open to hearing from readers. My email address is Joseph Badal, spelled Badal, books@outlook.com. I would encourage people, if they have questions, if they're looking for advice or encouragement, to email me. My website is josephbadalbooks.com, and all of my books are available in print and in ebook format, as well as five of them are currently in audio format, all available on Amazon.
Great. So I want to thank you, Joseph, for coming on today. And just to remind everybody, the book is Everything to Lose. It's the fourth book in the Lassiter and Martinez case file series. And it is available now for whoever would like to go grab a copy and start reading.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Well, thank you.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.